Welcome to the Golf Talk Podcast. This is episode 56, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Borzeski in Pennsylvania. We have both of our podcast personalities joining us this week. Jeff in Washington, hello.
Hello, Eric.
And Jack in New Jersey.
Hey, greetings from the East Coast.
Perhaps a short episode this week, but we'll start off with pretty much the only real news that we want to talk about is Scott Raplanc winning the Byron Nelson Classic.
Yeah, it was great, and I've never seen a guy so visibly shaking over a putt before than Scott Raplanc was on the 18th green, and it was a great win, and it was a good storyline.
That was awesome. I mean, it was just awesome. My redhead and I were both in tears watching that thing. I told her this, you know, the backstory of Raplanc and Nelson, and you know, Raplanc from Dallas, and he's going to win this thing after 21 years of playing it, and it was very emotional for both of us.
Were either of you surprised by Luke Donald's inability to get things done? The double bogey, I believe, on 9 or 10 or whatever certainly hurt him. Two-shot swing there that he gave up the lead for good at that point, but really couldn't get anything going the whole rest of the round, including on the last green where he had a perfect read off Scott Raplanc's putt, hit the putt he thought he should have hit, and missed it in the same exact spot as Scott Raplanc.
Well, I thought his was a little tighter than Raplanc's was, but yeah, I fully expected him to make that. That was pretty uncharacteristic. I actually picked up the round after he made the double, and so he played pretty solid towards the end there, but he did surprise me with that missed putt at the last.
Yeah, Carol mentioned that putt, you know, coming after Raplanc's. And, you know, Raplanc had hit that first putt so hard, I don't think that Donald got a really good read off of it. He hit his so much softer, and it broke so much more. You know, I think that was off. But getting back to your original question, Eric, I think that, you know, Donald didn't have the inspiration that Raplanc did. And I think in the end, that's really what made the difference.
Well, he only managed to shoot, a 3-under final round or less.
I wanted to say a 68.
2-under, yeah. So not a great finishing round on what amounts to a fairly straightforward golf course. And the pins were in the middle because the greens were so bad, so that it's not like they could tuck half the pins. So yeah. 68, rather uninspiring.
Well, it was a 66, actually. Raplanc shot a 466 in the final round, so that's a little better. Oh, Luke Donald, I see.
68 is not going to get it done in those conditions. Starts the day with a one-shot lead, so.
Could have been a lot better.
I'll tell you what, I would give Donald a pass on that, though. I really would. I think that he played very well. I think the double bogey, which is what obviously cost him the tournament, was just really sloppy, and he had to wonder what he was thinking about. But in the end, I think Raplanc had the gods with him.
Well, Raplanc is a guy that, you know, I mean, not to take away from, you know, the emotional side and all that, but is a guy that's not going to win very often. His last win came in 2001. Luke Donald is a guy we expect to be winning far more frequently than he seems to be. One win on the PGA Tour to this point. Are you disappointed, basically, in Donald's play for the past 2 or 3 years? You know, he contended kind of at Medina last year, but then kind of fell off. He didn't even finish second, despite playing in the final group. So is Luke Donald living up to his expectations and ours, or is he falling short?
Well, I think we're looking for, another Woods. We're looking for another Mickelson. We're looking for another star.
We're looking for a guy to win one tournament a year, and he's not even on that pace.
You know, and he's not going to be that kind of guy, I don't think. I think Raplanc is one of the ultimate underachievers in golf, and there's a lot of reasons for that, his diabetes being one of them and all his injuries. You know, I kind of thought that Donald and Raplanc in the last twosome was an equal pairing of peers of different generations.
Right.
I think as far as Donald goes, I think he's a great player. His last win was at the Honda Classic last year, which was a good win for him. So, you know, he's shown a lot of promise. I'm looking down the list of his events in 2006, and he notched quite a few top tens. I mean, he's great. His disadvantage, of course, is his length. He's very solid. I can remember watching the last round of the Honda Classic, and he just hit some incredible shots. And apart from dropping two shots yesterday, he played pretty good golf. He was two strokes off of Scott Raplanc. Would have shot the same score as Raplanc did, if not for that double. But I have high hopes for him. I think he's going to continue to. He's never going to be a Philly Mick or a Tiger or anybody. But he's going to collect some wins before it's all over.
It's bizarre how many players we have that are high ranking players that really don't perform well on the PGA Tour or get things done. Luke Donald I'd put in there. Retief Goosen without a win so far this year. Padraig Harrington hasn't won on the PGA Tour for a while. You know, he got that one or two wins a couple of years ago, and where has he been since? Sergio Garcia hasn't won on the PGA Tour for a while. Paul Casey, Nico Hearns up there, Rory Sabatini. You know, these are all guys in the top 20 in the world, and yet you think you could count on them to win a tournament a year apiece, and we're not seeing it. So,
well, it shows you how much it's a law. It's a kind of a game of percentages. I mean, these guys have good top 10 finishes. They notch a bunch of close, but not quite there. And bam, they're right up towards the top of the world golf rankings.
There's an argument to be made there about the complacency of finishing second and earning $600,000. You know, what's the risk of going for a shot on 18 when, you know, could cost you $300,000 falling to third place too? So,
well, I was interested in Donald's remarks at the end and how disappointed he was in finishing second for the second time this year. And I think that was good. I like to hear that he was not content with second. It was very disappointing. And, you know, he's young. He's gonna learn. There's such great parity on the PGA Tour outside of Tiger Woods. And
the Americans are doing pretty well this year. And again, with Scott Raplank picking up this one and winning another one. Name a foreigner to win on the PGA Tour this year and it'd be tough. Henrik Stenson is one. It's tough to name another except Vijay Singh from Fiji.
Well,
he's as American as anybody else.
Exactly. As much as I said Raplank is an underachiever, don't forget, he's got a pretty good Ryder Cup record. And,
nothing against Raplank. I used to pick him all the time on my fantasy teams.
Yeah.
Of course, this week I didn't. I picked Donald this week, and the bum had to finish second. So
yeah.
We'll be right back after this message from Titleist.
Ones, twos, threes, and fours.
But mostly ones.
I never start with a two.
Ones and threes.
I never play higher than a four.
Low numbers.
I like ones.
Anything but ones.
Fours in the final round.
These ones on Thursdays.
Twos on Fridays.
Threes on Saturdays.
And fours on Sundays.
Five, six, seven, or eight.
Whatever my caddy hands me.
Threes.
Anything but a three.
Nines.
Any number.
Any number. Any number. As long as it's Titleist.
Whatever the number, more players trust Titleist than all other golf balls combined.
And welcome back. This week in our forum topic of the week, we're kind of stepping aside from that. This week on the Sand Trap is very much about slow play, or the problem that is slow play, because certainly slow play is not good. So this week, we're very much focusing every article on the Sand Trap, this podcast, this section, everything that we're doing is about causes of slow play, because recognizing them will help. And of course, the cures to slow play, how you can play faster, how you can get other people to play faster, how we can all stop wasting so much of our life on the golf course. And that sounds odd because we like golf. We like being on the golf course, but I like my family and I'd rather spend, an extra hour at a time with them rather than spending 5 hours on a golf course. You know, let's get it down to four. And, four is a little too long, but we'll take a baby step and get down to 4 hours. Do you guys have any good slow play stories? Jack, you played a slow round today, I hear.
Yeah, I played 5 hours and 15 minutes today. You know, one of the contributing factors, it was cart path only.
Yeah.
And so we were, we were going back and forth more than we were going forward. But still in all, the group I was with, which included a 90-year-old retired doctor who couldn't hit it 150 yards, we were playing faster than the group in front of us. We were waiting on every shot. Now, there's something wrong with this.
Well, and it's not a matter of distance either, because if you play efficiently and you go to your ball and you're ready when it's time to hit, you can get through a round of golf. You don't have to be a low handicapper. If you play efficiently, you can keep up.
And a lot of
with any player.
A lot of the worst golfers that I see are actually some of the fastest, because they'll kind of get up, hit it, and they only have to walk 5 steps to the next shot. They keep the same club. But, it's not a slow play. It's not a bad versus good. You can be a bad slow golfer, or you can be a good slow golfer, but you're still a slow golfer. So it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of, common sense, parking the cart in the right place. You don't have to walk backwards, 50 yards to get it. It's a matter of hitting when you're ready. If you're playing a 600-yard par 5 and you have 350 yards to the green, you don't have to wait for it to clear because your drive only went 250.
Well, it's for me, it's a matter of education. I think a lot of golfers, they're not like us. They're not going to follow the game. They're not going to be reading about it all the time. They're going to show up for their round, and they're going to be out there doing their best, and they're going to be chumming it up with their buddies. But they don't know. No one has told them. Nobody at the course when they paid for their round said, hey, here's a card to help speed up play, slow slow play is a real problem. Take this and please keep up the pace.
They have rangers at these courses, though, that fail to educate. They fail to enforce. They fail to do anything. I played today, and a ranger drove past a twosome in front of me. I was in a twosome behind them that had two open holes in front of them with a foursome ahead of them. That twosome couldn't keep pace with the foursome in front. He just kind of drove past. You know, we're like, what are you doing? Do your job. Tell those people, hey, pick up the pace. There's a foursome that's going faster.
Well, the problem is that Marshall's probably out there for free golf himself, so he's not really an enforcer. He's trying to keep on good terms with everybody who's playing.
Well, and that's a real problem. I think a lot of the marshals that are out there are instructed not to be confrontational. You know, they're into guest relations. They're into, you know, they're trying to encourage people to come back. They don't want to get into a fist fight with anybody on the course over slow play. And I, you know, but the other thing is, I think that the players just don't have an awareness. They're not aware. They're not focused. They're just, you know, wandering around, and they have no idea what it takes to play faster. And to play faster would be more fun. And they, but they don't know that.
You'd probably play better too. You know, exactly. Make a decision, hit the ball. Golf is a very simple sport. The ball's sitting there. You can hit it whenever you're ready.
Yeah.
And that's key. Be ready. You know, don't be, you know, gazing at the stars, watching the hawk circle in the sky. You know, sit in the cart while somebody else is hitting. You know, get to your ball with a club and be ready.
And I don't know about you, but I play so much worse. It's something I need to work on, because slow play is a problem that probably won't go away. And I play so much worse when I'm distracted. Jeff and I played, you know, it took us 3 hours to play 9 holes last year. And then there was a half an hour wait at the 10th tee because people were getting food.
Yeah, waiting around to get their lunch.
You know, it's just, you know, when I played in Scotland, which is, you know, a different animal because they treat golf much differently there, and they haven't been, I think, poisoned by the, you know, professional golf on TV to the extent we have been here in the U.S. But, you know, they're playing in three and a half hours.
I've heard, too, it's the difference between stroke play being a major focus here versus match play. If you're out of a hole, you pick up over there.
Well, exactly. And, you know, and it's a whole different game. They have their dogs with them. They, you know, they're pulling trolley carts. But it only takes them 3 hours. You know,
sounds like more of the population is educated, and they are true golfers in that sense. They know why they're there, and they're there to play golf, and they do it.
Exactly. They're focused.
Okay. All right, we'll be right back after this message.
I'm working on shortening my swing.
Ball position and alignment.
Not thinking too much.
My first major.
My next one.
Working on getting back on top.
Staying positive after every shot.
Making more putts.
Going lower.
Lower. Even lower.
Finding my caddy.
Just trying to get better every day.
Even the world's best want to be better. That's why there's the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
And welcome back. This week in our Beating Ball segment, we're leading off with the problems on the TPC Greens. Of course, the TPC Greens at the Byron Nelson Classic. Bare patches, and they just look terrible on TV. Brown spots everywhere.
Yeah, it looks terrible. It looked like, stains all over the greens.
Well, I think it was a disgrace. And I read something about the greenskeeper saying, well, you know, the grass had lived out its life. I've never heard of a green, of grass living out its life, you know.
It's at the end of their life cycle.
Yeah, at the end of their life cycle. What the heck is that about? What are they kidding me? That was a disgrace.
I've heard that greens have a life cycle, but with proper care, you basically renew it, you know, every year. I mean, aeration, et cetera, you know. But basically, you know, I've heard that an unmaintained green that's just kind of mowed and fertilized and so on kind of has a lifespan, and thus, you know, it'll suck up all the nutrients and then it'll be done. But, you know, come on. This is not, you know. I mean, if my local, you know, $5 round course can keep up their greens, half of them are clover, but.
The other thing that really blew my mind, I don't know if you guys saw it, but, you know, they've hired D.A. Wibring. Well, you know, there's a big name in golf course architecture. They've hired him to redo the course, and I saw him on TV talking about, oh, we're going to have this multi-tiered waterfall over by the 18th.
No, it's a water feature. A water feature.
It's not a
lake or a pond or a waterfall. It's a water feature.
It's a multi-tiered water feature.
Yes. And the Ginn tribute will be featuring Michelle Wee, her first return to the LPGA Tour. The game tribute is played in Hawaii, hosted by Annika Sorenstam. Annika Sorenstam may return for that. But the tournament starts May 28th. Wee expects to have clearance from her doctors to play. And again, it'll be in Hawaii. So she's looking to play the LPGA Championship in early June. So this will be a good tune-up for that.
Yeah, and they're both, they want to welcome Annika Sorenstam back too. She's hoping to be there following, hopefully, some healing in her back.
Next story here is about Butch Harmon and Natalie Gobus. Basically, Natalie Gobus is a stalker, homeless man dad lookalike. Butch Harmon needs to have a conversation with him and tell him to step off because the two of them cannot keep coaching Natalie. What's John Gobus basically needs to hand over Natalie at this point. Trust her in the hands of Butch Harmon and step off.
You think that might be a good idea?
I think he needed to step off several years ago when I first saw him on Natalie's playing lessons with the pros. If he didn't come across as a creepy dude there,
a prototypical stage dad or just, give it up.
Bye, John. Your stalker, homeless, creepy dude ways are not wanted.
I can't add anything to that.
Finally, big news here. Phil Mickelson was unable to catch a flight because an airport was closed for his tee time, a one-hour flight for the Pro-Am tee time. And unlike Retief Goosen, who partook of a bit too much Grey Goose vodka during his sponsor party last year at the Nissan Open, Phil Mickelson was not disqualified from the tournament. PGA Tour rules state that if you missed the Pro-Am, unless you tried, within reason to get there on time, or you did everything, humanly possible to get there on time, you should be disqualified if you miss your Pro-Am. That's what the rules say. And it's raising a big stink. Appleby, Sean McKeel, Allenby, they're all saying, what's up with this? Why is Phil given a pass here? Phil was, of course, one of the few big names to play at the Byron Nelson Classic. Fair or not? What's the deal here?
The jury's still out for me. I read today, and I forget exactly the source of the story, but Phil was out on Monday. He actually got there early, but then he was out the previous day doing some charity work with kids. Tried to fly back that afternoon, and the weather prevented him from doing so. Things get a little gray for me later that night. I'm not sure exactly if he could have flown in earlier in the morning.
His tee time was at 7 a.m. The airport opened at 5 o'clock. He could have had a flight out at 5:30. It's an hour-long flight. He'd be in at 6:30. He could have driven. The program
Tim Rizzaforte made the poorest apology for Phil that I've ever heard in that. He's saying, Fincham couldn't get in from Oklahoma City, and Phil couldn't get in, blah, 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 blah. But what you just said, Eric, that, the airport was open at 5:30. It's not like the guy's flying commercial and he's got to wait for a flight at 7 a.m. to get back to Dallas. He's got a friggin' private plane. Why doesn't he get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and fly to Dallas?
He could hire a driver, like I said. It's a 4-hour drive or whatever.
It was lame. It was lame, and whatever heat they get from it, they deserve. That's my opinion.
I think that the heat is more on the tour than it is on Phil Mickelson. Obviously, he made a mistake, and he would have had to have put up with the consequences, but maybe they were just looking for the feel-good story of Phil Mickelson being there the year after, Byron Nelson passes away, and then...
I can't blame Phil for saying, oh, no, I should be disqualified. Disqualify me, please. I can't blame him for not doing that.
Well, of course he's not going to say that.
But, right, so I can't blame Phil for this one, really. I can't blame him for not trying harder to get there, perhaps. And I can't blame the tour, like you said, for not coming down on him, not enforcing their policy. Goes to what some have said, that there's two tours. There's the Tiger Tour with Tiger and a few other random high-ranking people.
Well, it's not just Mickelson. It's not just Mickelson. It's the next alternate who missed a chance to make a check.
And it's his pro-am partners who were probably happy as heck to get Phil Mickelson in the draw and then got lunch with him.
And he signed Masters flagstick, flags for them.
Yeah, okay. I mean...
very nice.
As much as I'd like to have lunch with Tiger Woods, I'd rather play 18 holes with him.
Absolutely.
Comparing the two.
And I'll tell you what, we haven't heard the end of this.
I hope not. I hope it becomes an issue.
Well, the next time that this happens, Phil will be sitting it out. I can tell you that because it's drawn a lot of criticism, both from the media and, more importantly, from a lot of players like McKeel, Allenby, and certainly others.
Well, that about does it for episode 56 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. You can check our show notes out online at thesandtrap.com every Wednesday. Click the links to the stories we've discussed this week. Again, this is National Get Your Ass in Gear Week, whatever you want to call it. Play faster. That's
hit
it.
Hit the damn ball.
And then get home to your wife. You know? You married her for reasons.
Well said.
Maybe it's because she has money, but then go home and spend it. Just get home, okay? And get out of my way.
Golf is not a lifetime pursuit. Golf, a round of
it's
golf.
It's a lifetime support that's not supposed to take a lifetime.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, well, hasta la vista, guys.
See you next week.
Goodbye.